Pineapple Tidbits, which are the most amazing food in the world, bring you
Phoenix City.
To Phoenix City. We're back after a little bit of a hiatus, but joined by Cam and Frosty tonight. Dave couldn't make it, but yeah, we're back into it.
Good evening, Patrick.
How are we doing, Cam?
I am just finally catching up on a bit of sleep that I've missed over the last month, which is quite nice.
Children? No, the World Cup.
World Cup.
Of course the World Cup, yeah.
I'm sure children definitely played a part in that, but the biggest factor was getting up at 2 o'clock every morning to watch football.
Those 2 a.m. games sucked.
It's gonna be just like that at Qatar as well. So
is it?
Yeah.
I assume it would be better for us.
No, they're slightly further away than Russia is. Yeah, when you look at geographically.
So really? What does that mean, 12 o'clock
or games? Maybe they're slightly closer.
It's still 12 hours difference.
But either way, it's not going to be that much more of a time difference. It's still going to be nighttime games.
Still, but like the midnight games were good for me because I just stayed up and watched the midnight games. But then they ended after two rounds. Jeez, there was like 8 days worth of them and then they were over. That's a dog. That's like licking my hand all of a sudden. Yeah. I was not expecting that. Yes, your dogs are mental, Frosty.
Yeah, they are.
Yes. Anyway, we'll get to work up soon. We'll talk about it in a bit more depth, but let's jump to the Phoenix, first of all, who have actually done some things since we last potted. They've signed a couple of players and played a couple of preseason games. Let's start with the signings. First of all, Stephen Taylor, striker from the UK.
No, he's not.
Was he not?
He's a defender from the UK.
This shows you how much I paid attention. Is he a defender?
He's a defender. Centre-back, played 195 EPL games for Newcastle United. Played over here during the Football United Tour against us.
Sure he doesn't play striker?
Positive. He doesn't play striker.
Okay, sweet.
Because he scored about 5 goals in about 5 seasons. So
I mean, that's as many as...
even Heskey scores more than that.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure, I think it's very obvious we've watched probably more of him, so believe us, he's
totally
a centre-back.
I've kind of taken 2 weeks or 3 weeks off just caring about football because I've been busy.
If you see his stock photo, he screams centre-back.
He's a defender? All right.
Yeah, so
I believe
obviously he's got fantastic experience, which is in itself is going to be great to bring into the squad. I think the other key thing is whilst he's 32.
Yeah.
He's not going to be quick, but his match awareness is going to be next level, basically.
Next level?
Next level.
See, well, 32 is the prime age for a defender, right?
Maybe at A-League level.
Probably A-League, but yeah.
Yeah, certainly a bit of a factor there. For me, what struck me was some of the talk coming out of Peterborough, where he's been playing most recently.
Yeah.
They raved about him, said that not only was he a good player, they said he was a really good bloke. There was a game that basically they were looking to that the snow was probably going to cancel, and he was out there cleaning the snow off the lines with a broom to make sure that the game went ahead. And it's kind of like that's a cool sort of attitude, you know. He's still obviously really wants to play, wants to be out there. And I think if you're going to come across the other side of the world, you want that ethos rather than the guy that's coming here to collect a paycheck.
Yeah, I think the reaction from the Posh fans was they were really disappointed that he's left. So
Posh fans?
Oh, so Peterborough is known as the Posh.
I thought you were just insulting them.
No.
All right.
Genuinely known as the Posh.
Okay,
so
right,
and
that's fine.
The fans have been there genuinely disappointed that he's left the club. I really do think this is has the potential to be the best signing we've ever made.
Well, we've just been shipping too many goals in recent seasons. We've been shipping 50 goals a season for the past 3 or 4 years. So
yeah, and this I can actually see, whilst obviously Jura signed on for another year, I can see our starting centre back pairing being Fox and Taylor.
Yep, totally.
Yep. I'm okay with that.
Jura will be on the bench, I think.
Jura's day has passed.
Armband will go to Krishna.
Yeah,
I think that seems the most likely.
Honestly, I look at Taylor as the mark he has made with Peterborough and the experience he has. I mean, he's going to be a candidate for that armband as well.
I totally agree, but I don't think he's going to come in straight away and take it.
Yeah, it'd be unusual, wouldn't it?
Yep. So he's got, was it 1+1, I think? So if he takes that +1, then every possibility, because obviously Giro will probably retire.
Depends if Roy's around or not. As long as Roy's around, he'll be captain, I reckon.
You reckon?
Yeah.
To me, he's just he's not really a natural leader. It just does. It's not his personality. But I mean, he obviously is well loved in the changing room. So yeah.
I think he has the he has a dressing room. People, I think, still trust him and that kind of thing. And I'm not sure someone coming in first year would have that same kind of.
No, totally.
Yeah.
I think it will come down beyond that first year to what his actual intentions are.
Totally.
Is he going to stay here beyond those 2 years? Is he happy to stay out of 5 years at the club? Fantastic if he does. And then, I'd say you could probably drop the armband on him because he's got the experience and the knowledge to lead a team like that.
Yeah. So we've got a central defender. We've also got a goalkeeper signed. I forgot his name because it only happened a few hours ago. What's his name?
Curto.
Philippe Curto or something.
Yeah. I can't remember his first name, but
Philippe.
Yeah, okay.
A bit strange that we have an import goalkeeper. There's only been four in total in the A-League history.
When you look
one
at
of them was our last one was Tony Warner. I think he'll be an upgrade on Tony Warner because that's not hard.
When you look at the alternatives, I think that this makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think once we lost Tando, once we knew that Tando wasn't going to be here this year, we needed to do something different because we couldn't afford to put Italiano in there. And we couldn't afford to put Keegan Smith in there.
And we couldn't put Sale in there either.
No, because,
I actually think you made the point already, Patrick. We shipped 50 goals in the last 3 to 4 seasons. That alone means we need to do something different in the back end.
Absolutely.
If that is using one of your import slots on a good keeper, obviously he hasn't played, I think, since 2016, but was playing in the Eredivisie and has made a lot of appearances in that league.
Dale said, I think he had 3 seasons as a starting keeper and 3 as a reserve keeper as well. So, he's only 25, I think. So that means he's basically been around the trap since he was 19 and has come through the Polish under-18s, under-20s and under-21s. So he's seen a lot of top-quality football.
Yeah, I think this is a great signing. Yep. I think usually we frown upon import goalkeepers, but our goalkeeping stocks have been laughable in recent years, ever since Mossy left. And I think, it's...
Think of it this way. This is actually kind of a bonus import because...
Krishna.
Mm. So if Krishna is to become a New Zealand citizen where obviously all the chat is around that, we gain back a visa spot. If you're going to say we're going to use that on the keeper, effectively you're going to have 6 imports in your team. I actually think this is a really smart use of that spot.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. It's like we've done so well at the attacking end in that 3 of our top 4, Singh, Roy presumably, and Burns are all considered locals would be considered locals.
Absolutely.
And you can't look at any of the other A-League sides and say, 3/4 of that attacking quartet is going to be considered a local. So it means that we do have that extra one over. It means that we can easily, get 1 or 2 defensive midfielders in or a centre midfield or something, and obviously Taylor as well. It means that your whole spine, we could get a striker, a defensive midfielder. Obviously, we've got Taylor and Curto. Mm. And that's still only 4.
And there's still the connection that they have with the other Polish DM, the Kopczynski. Obviously, there's nothing has been confirmed by that from the club yet, so I don't want to entirely speculate over that. But if that signing is, as the rumours are saying, then fantastic. That's, again, the whole spine thing is getting strengthened, which is great.
I enjoy that you said I don't want to speculate there. I mean, you've proceeded to speculate. I enjoy that a lot. But I think given that we essentially had all 5 import slots available to us this season, which is the first time in years I can remember that being a thing, why wouldn't we take this choice? I think this is a fundamental choice that we've made, and I think it will really help us because he can't be worse than Italiano. Like, let's be honest here.
I still don't think Italiano is the worst goalkeeper we've ever had.
No, that goes to Tony Warner.
By a long way.
I remember that Perth game in the rain. Tony Lockhead gets himself sent off for a second yellow in the 90th minute, preceding free kick, back post, we just let him take it. It's the worst. It was awful.
Yeah.
I remember that GM was at that time, I don't think it was Domi yet. Might have been Nathan Greenham at the time. He, CEO, he sent out a note to all the members thanking people for actually turning up that day. That's how horrible that weather was. And we sat through some...
Still not the worst game. The worst game ever was Gold Coast. 2-1 up at half time, ended up drawing 3-3.
The worst game ever at home for me was the 3-0 loss to Central Coast Mariners the week after the 4-1 loss to Brisbane that ended that streak of games at Westpac.
I was talking purely on weather.
Oh, weather? Yeah, that game was awful. Oh, was
worst game home ever was 5-1.
There was the Brisbane game at Suncorp.
It was the 5-1 loss that you guys are doing the pod about.
That is the worst game.
Worst weather surely would be the game that was canned at Suncorp.
Oh, yeah, 78 emotions. I think we're just talking home games, though.
Yeah, just home games.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of blocked out the worst game from my head.
You've watched it at least 12 times.
13 times now?
13 times.
Stockholm syndrome or what?
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't secretly enjoy it yet.
Actually, 14 times, Patrick, because you did watch it live the first time.
So should we rock on to the preseason games?
Yeah, preseason games. Yeah, let's do that.
That's where I was going with the, obviously, Kopczynski's.
You host one podcast, now you're running the thing.
Well, you just went on a diversion down memory lane, mate.
I get confused with the podcast and just try and, like, hurl insults at myself about and
just
reveling in
awfulness.
Yes. Yeah. The preseason games, we have a 2-1 win over Stop Out and a 1-0 win over Rapper.
Mirama was the first game.
Was it?
Not Stop Out.
Well, earlier on, before I said, was it Stop Out that we played? And nobody, when I made my run sheet, and nobody corrected me.
Well, it was because we didn't know what the hell you were talking about.
Probably weren't listening to you, mate.
It was Miramar, you're right, because it was basically half Team Wellington. 2-1 in that game. It sounds like the one was a goalkeeping howler where he's just dragged someone down the box and thought the penalty was solid by Ross Allen. But apart from that, the Phoenix seemed to be dominant in that game. None of us saw it. Dave was there, but obviously he's not here. But same thing with the Rapper game, by the sounds of it. Yep. Phoenix dominant, got their goal through Burns playing the ball to Singh, who slotted it, and then dominant for the rest of the game, just didn't score a heap of goals.
Penalty saved in there as well from Fenton.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was Fenton in goal?
No, Fenton took the penalty and it was saved by the Rapper keeper, Josh Morris.
All right. Apparently wasn't a great pen, but...
Well, it's not a great pen if they save it, but he was still got to go the right way, and he did.
Hudson Wehongi basically knackering himself walking on the field.
Yeah, I heard about that. He walked out with the team and then didn't start the game because of injury.
Yeah, apparently he hurt his knee.
What can you do walking out? I don't know what you can, like...
Fall in a rabbit hole? I don't know.
Can get pretty cold over there at night.
In the Rapper, yeah.
Maybe he just seized up a bit and...
He walked out. It reminds me of those games where you do like 100 games of players and we do the presentation to them before the game. I'm like, if they just run down, slip over on the concrete and bash their head, we've just given them their 100th game presentation and they're not even going to play. Like, this is weird. Hudson Wehongi looking good. By all sounds, I've always rated Hudson Wehongi.
Yeah, I must admit, when he did that trial a couple of seasons ago, we saw him play at Memorial Park.
It was like 6 years back now, something ridiculous.
It's quite a while.
It was quite a while.
Yeah.
But I remember him playing down the left-hand side and being pretty tidy, getting forward, making good runs, doing that. I was quite disappointed we didn't sign him then, but, you know, he's come back and he's giving a crack.
2013, I remember
would
that.
Be, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. That was the start of Heisingham's second season.
I love that that's your yardstick for things. When was Stein Heisinger?
It's because his boy had a mohawk and I saw it for the first time that night, so it stuck in my mind for that reason. Because Stein had one as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cam?
Wow. Sorry, this is how my brain works.
Bad hairstyles.
Wow. It
would have been a nice segue into the World Cup, but, you know, that's fine. That first game, apparently, Keegan managed to pull a guy down in the box after completely miscontrolling a ball, popping it straight to their player, and then...
And that's why it's a good thing he's not going to be our starting keeper.
Yeah, it does kind of certainly underline Mr. Rudan's choice in recruitment.
Do you reckon we had this locked and loaded before that game, or would you think it was that game that really secured it at Rudan's head?
Heard rumours about it being before that, but certainly if you're a coach, you see that and you've already decided on a new keeper, you're like, yep,
I was right.
Yep. He was probably, I would say they're probably in negotiations at the time.
Yeah, makes
these
sense.
It's not usual for these things to be very, very quick. They usually go, you know, take a bit of time, especially to come over here.
Yeah, true.
Although Taylor was pretty quick and pretty quiet by the sound of it.
We had no idea about Taylor, did we?
He might have been looking for a change.
Yeah,
he's looking for a change. He's already got the idea to come over here, and then that's when it can happen quickly. Whereas this guy, he may not have been looking for a change, and we've just gone, hey, here's an opportunity.
Yeah, Kopczynski apparently it would be a loan deal, which is kind of...
That's interesting.
Yeah, I did find that very interesting that, you know, that we would manage to get a loan out of Warsaw. So
I'm okay with that.
Oh yeah, totally okay with that. I don't mind loan arrangements, but it's interesting that, you know, we've had two guys recruit, well, potentially two guys getting recruited out of Poland of all places, because I didn't know Mark Rodan had any connection to Poland at all.
Yeah, I don't know where his connections are at all.
Is Poland close to Croatia?
They're both in Europe. How's that? Is that good enough for you?
They're both in kind of centrally Eastern Europe. So
Poland's at the top, and then you've got
any number of Balkan
Slovakia,
states.
Slovenia,
yeah.
Austria, they're all sitting in between.
Yeah, and then Croatia.
Croatia's down there.
Nice. Yeah. That's close enough.
Yeah.
Theoretically, it could be a similar scout.
Hungary's in there too.
I am very hungry. I haven't had dinner.
Serbia.
You're having shaved ham for your dinner as we record. Well, yeah. These pineapple tidbits are amazing.
They are, actually, and I shouldn't be eating them, but I am.
You just can't stop, right? Okay, I was going to have one.
Moorish.
Yeah. On to the draw.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, if we want to.
Yeah, okay.
Just run us through the highlights, Patrick.
Okay, so the highlights. Well, first of all, we have an FFA Cup game against Bentley Greens on the 22nd of August.
Just quite it. It's really nice not to be playing another A-League team at that level.
That's not on the 22nd of August. That's on the 7th of August. Sorry, I got that completely wrong. It's 20 days away.
Oh, Jesus.
It's close.
Yeah.
I disagree, Cam. I think it's a bad thing that we're not playing an A-League team.
I think we're going to win. Because we're not playing an A-League team.
Yeah, but is that... So the way that I've seen these games in the past is that I haven't really cared about the result so much. It's a free A-League preseason game that we get. And Ernie always talked about how he'd get three games against A-League teams and it'd be one too few. And I think that current coaches would find it the same way. And this is one fewer A-League game that we get.
Only if we lose.
We'll probably chuck in a Western Sydney Wanderers Newcastle Jets tour again, because we seem to always do that. It seems to be what we do now, is we go and play those two teams with someone like Bentley Greens in the middle. But I actually would have preferred that we had that in the FFA Cup, just to get that A-League game time under our belts. But obviously that's not going to happen, and we might win.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We've only won once in the FFA Cup.
And then we lost 5-1 to Melbourne City.
Yeah.
In the next round. Not even my 5-1 result. Just
yeah, that was a different 5-1.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. We open the season against the Newcastle Jets at home. This is 5 p.m. on Sunday, the 21st of October.
Not only the return of Ernie Merrick, but the return of Matt Redenton.
Yeah.
And Glenn Moss.
This has been called the hashtag Coaches Derby by the Phoenix Twitter account, which I hate.
I'm not a fan.
I'm sorry, Courtney, but that's not okay.
They do have quite a few ex-Phoenix there now, so there's at least three.
Did they have ex-Phoenix, or did we have ex-something else, and then they went on? Let's face it, Mossy has been around.
Mossy's Phoenix.
And Ernie.
So we'll do that. That's 94 days away. The app tells me how many days away this is, using the official Wellington Phoenix app, which is fine. The 12 Pubs of Lockhead game will be on the 22nd of December against the Brisbane Roar. That'll be a lot of fun. So if you're planning on going for Christmas, go away on the 23rd, but book an evening flight.
Oh, yes.
Don't book a morning flight after 12 Pubs of Lockhead. Word to the from the wise.
That's from experience.
Yes. If you are planning on going away over New Year's and you want to go via Melbourne, Adelaide and Western Sydney, you can do that because we play in all three of those places within 10 days. Friday the 28th of December, we play the Victory. A week later, we play Adelaide. And then 3 days after that, we play the Western Sydney Wanderers, which will be quite a good little trip if you want to make all three of those.
Yeah, Rory was talking about doing it, wasn't he?
I think Dave's planning on doing it as well. Two games outside of Wellington will be Saturday the 16th and Saturday the 23rd of February against the Victory and Sydney, respectively. Westpac Stadium is just completely unavailable for February. And it sounds,
it's a kapa haka.
Yeah, some sort of big stage being put on. So
it takes about a week to put up and a week to pull down from what I hear. So.
And it's a two-week festival, is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it takes a week to put a stage up.
It's massive.
They're doing it wrong.
It's huge.
They put the Guns N' Roses stage up in 2 days. Like, can't be bigger than that. But yeah, so the stadium's out of action for the entirety of February, which means that the Phoenix have to go away. It sounds like at least one of those will be Auckland, but not both, maybe. We'll see.
I'd like one of them to be drivable. Just like New Plymouth or Napier.
It can't be New Plymouth.
Yeah, it can't be New Plymouth because their stadium's completely out of action now.
It's condemned.
Oh, that's a real shame.
Yeah, so, that's why they couldn't go there last year. By the sounds of it, the Phoenix tried to go there last year, but they got this information early on before it became public and went, no, actually, we can't take games there.
Then Taupo or Napier would be
There's nothing
in
Taupo, though. Like, there's no stadium there.
Owen Delaney Park holds 20,000 people.
Does it really?
Yes.
Oh, that might be cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it did. I knew it was there. I didn't realize it held 20,000.
Yeah.
Even Roger
the Bowl.
I've never been to Owen Delaney Park. However, the question was actually in the Dom Post quiz today.
So you learned it from the quiz. How many people does Owen Delaney Park hold?
20,000. It was in there today.
Actually, that's ridiculous.
Actually, it was what town is holds a ground of 20,000 people named after Owen Delaney? That was the question. So the answer was Taupo. But there you go.
Taupo. The 28th of April is when we finish our season away to Perth Glory.
Finish regular season.
Finish the season. Let's be honest.
Regular season.
Sure.
I have high hopes for Mark Redden.
Yeah, and so despite that happening, I believe there's the return of Big Wednesday. It might be Wednesday.
Big Wednesday is like a lotto draw or something.
Well, maybe it's Wednesday the 23rd of January. We have a game at 7:30. Maybe it's that. Now, I think there's a day where we play. There's like five. The whole round happens in a day.
See, I'm quite cool with that because
I like it.
They did that. New Year's Day or the 2nd of January,
yeah,
many years ago.
Yeah, and we beat Sydney 4-2.
Yeah, they kicked off here at like 2:30 in the afternoon, and the last game was a night game in Perth, and they just went across the eastern seaboard and across to Perth. It was really well done.
Yeah, so in order to fit the games, and with the international windows, of course, which exist, that's why the season's starting 2 weeks after it usually does, because it's
glorious.
A window. So because of that, they have to find games somewhere else. So they're doing five games in a day, which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. I like it.
The problem is that we get an early game or something, it's like a 5 p.m. game or something here or something like that. But
that's great. I love 5 p.m. games here.
Yeah,
I'd rather play 2:30 or 3 o'clock here.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Saturday 7:30 games and then some Sunday. I think the first Sunday's a 5 p.m. game or 5:30 p.m. game and then the rest of them, there's 7:30s.
There's 3 sevens on a Sunday. One of those is in Easter.
So that's not so bad, but the other ones are a bit shit. But they're almost a necessary evil now. We take those Sunday 7 p.m. games and we're not the only club that gets them anymore, which is good. They go elsewhere as well. They shouldn't exist in the first place, but we're not the only ones getting up with them. So.
It's literally the worst time to put a football game on. You'll get no crowds anywhere.
Indeed. Yeah. Good way for me to finish it, eating my pineapple tidbit before finishing your point there.
Sorry, I've got one of those in my mouth as well.
Put it in after you finish talking.
We were just stuck in
pineapple tidbit hiatus. Yeah, so I think on the whole, the draws, it could have been worse for us.
It's adequate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what you'd come to expect, to be honest.
I'm happy with it. Given that I know what it can be, I'm happy with it. So,
I just remembered. Apparently, there's a kid called Harris. Joe Harris. It's trialling as defensive midfielder.
Out of Kapiti?
Yeah, Kapiti and then the US. Yeah. So he's one of the newer people to come in and have a wee trial.
Last year's trialling, unlike some others who refused to trial.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're never going to get a...
Patrick's getting catty.
What? No.
Well, no, if you don't trial, you're not going
to... Well, it sounds like there's been some players who have refused to come to the Phoenix without being offered a contract up front. And I'm just like, why would we offer you a contract up front? It's just interesting. I'm not catty at all.
If you are not already a professional footballer, then I can't understand why you wouldn't trial.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're already a professional footballer...
But these guys
are. You have a contract... Then sure, you can tell people not to bother. But if you're not already there, this is the way you do it.
Sounds like the players that we're talking about aren't professional footballers yet.
Yeah, they are.
Are they?
They're getting paid.
Well, that's just speculation.
They pay for coaching.
Yes.
Not necessarily for playing.
Basically, they're Auckland players, is what you're saying, right? And the rumours are that they're Auckland players.
I don't think they're even rumours.
Yeah, they're not, yeah. It's just like, I don't understand why you'd not want to make the step up to A-League?
Well, for me, the fact that if they're out of Auckland City, or in fact, if they're not from Team Wellington, they're not going to the Club World Cup, therefore they're not going to get seen playing international teams at that higher level, therefore they're not going to get scouted, therefore they're not going to get picked up by overseas teams. So their options are very limited if they're going to just reject anything local.
Yeah.
You know, that's just their choice, so I say.
It is, yes. Should we move on to New Zealand football?
Oh, please.
We haven't actually recorded a podcast since all this went down, which is disappointing. I think like it would have been more bitey and more filled with gleeful joy about Andy Martin stepping down from his role.
Retiring.
They just don't get up and dance. It's not appropriate. You'll wake the children sleeping in the house.
But it's been a little while, so the dust has settled slightly. But yes, Andy Martin has retired.
Hung his boots up.
Spending more time supporting his beloved Liverpool FC.
It was interestingly worded, wasn't it?
And I'm glad everybody called it out for the bullshit that it is. Yeah. He's resigned because there is a major investigation going on.
In which he looks very bad.
The way he handled a bunch of complaints about employees of his, or contractors of his.
Yeah. Honestly, I think what sums this whole situation up the most is that about 3 days after he retires, there is a statement from New Zealand Football saying that the employee he threw under the bus actually did nothing wrong. There was no performance issue. In fact, it was the complete opposite. And that's come out from New Zealand Football. So the fact that they have literally come out and said the exact opposite of what Andy Martin is on record as saying sums up everything you need to know.
Yeah, well, it was Claire Hamilton. Was the employee in question.
Like the manager, the team manager, for the trip to Scotland.
Yeah, and a long-standing team manager of Football Ferns as well.
What Andy Martin said was that she was being performance managed at the time
She left, did an exit interview, saying that there are problems here, that's why I'm leaving. Yeah. And he said that that was a performance issue, and there's no reason for the New Zealand Football to release a statement other than there was legal action threatened from Claire Hamilton. Don't know this for a fact, just speculating. Right. But odds on, there was legal action saying slander, libel. Slander's the.
Oh no, actually, slander I think is because it's verbal, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, it's defamation. And you can't do that. As a CEO of a company, you can't do that to protect your own skin.
You're going to come into a question, I guess, in privacy laws as well about saying to the wider public about someone else's performance
even
in their
job. Yeah, and even if there was performance issues.
Yeah, you can't say that.
Exactly.
You can't come out and say that. Yeah. To the media, to the random public, because you are defaming that person in public.
And I think that Andy Martin should have been removed from his job like he has now. Let's not kid ourselves. He was removed from his role and they tried to paint a nice public picture. That should have happened 2 years ago. Because there were enough signs 2 years ago that things weren't right and New Zealand Football allowed it to go on for too long. And it's reached this peak. And the amount of stuff that's happened in the last 12 months, we've talked about on the pod before. Dave read out a list of things that Andy Martin's been in charge of that he's just completely...
Ballsed up.
I'm trying not to swear because I don't want to go through this thing and kazoo it out.
Yeah,
but,
fair enough.
And it's taken so long for him to be removed from his office. And, like, that's just ridiculous. The fact that Derek Shaw sat next to him in that press conference, which I didn't get a chance to talk about because I wasn't on that pod, but... He sat next to me in the press conference and backed him. He said that Andy Martin has the full backing of the board. Sorry, he said full confidence of the board. And at the time, I went, okay, he's going to be gone 3 weeks, surely. And then it happened. It was gone 3 weeks because that's the... But he sat there and backed Andy Martin. And that's just ridiculous.
It's the same press conference where Andy Martin said this with comments back to Claire Hamilton. I wonder, genuinely wonder if they've walked out of that room and Derek Shaw said, what the were you thinking to say those things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just the fact that it went on for so long and that there's become this major issue about Andreas Harraff, which, let's not kid ourselves, the most important thing about this whole review is that the players for the Hall of Ferns have a safe working environment at the end of it.
Yep.
The fact that this has been allowed to happen and that Andy Martin's been allowed to spout bullshit in the media is ridiculous. Yeah. And I am not sad to see the back of him one bit.
No, I mean, I think the whole Andy Martin's judgment has really been kind of shown up how poor it is when you've got Andreas Harraff has been placed on special leave while he was being investigated, and the first thing he's done is gone and given an interview and badmouthed New Zealand Football and what's going on in an Austrian newspaper. And it's like, one, there's a code of conduct thing around badmouthing. You know, certainly that was part of the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah.
So presumably it applies to all New Zealand Football
employees. It's definitely a violation of the code of conduct.
Yeah, he's done that while under investigation for his conduct. Yeah. And he's like, oh, this shows he was just he is a poor judge of what is acceptable behaviour if he can't grasp that. So, yeah, and Martin backed him and backed him again and then backed him again.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Clean out from the top obviously is the only way to do it. But what they do from here is, I mean, talking about the board, you know, what their next step is.
Yeah. There's an independent review, and reading through the document about the review, it's mainly focused on the conduct that happened on the tours between Andreas Hiraf, well, Andreas Hiraf's conduct, and the secondary focus is the way the New Zealand Football handled it, which means that there's not going to be a wider investigation into the way Andrew Martin handled it, which is a potentially good or a bad thing.
I think that's because he's fallen on his sword. That's why it's not going that wide. If he was still there and in place,
yeah,
I think there's every possibility that it would go that far.
Which is a shame.
I think the end we've got the right outcome.
Yeah.
So I'm prepared to accept the outcome in lieu of effectively now it would just be a witch hunt. We don't need to witch hunt him. Yeah, he's already gone.
I think I'm completely on board with the main focus of the investigation being the way that Andreas Hiraf was treating his players. Like, that should absolutely be the focus. Just ruining my point by blowing your nose. Thanks, Cam. But I would have liked there to be some sort of that was my foot, not a dog. Some sort of investigation into the way the board handled the entire thing. And I don't think we're going to get that because the board are just as culpable here. They were in charge of Andy Martin and backed him at a time when he probably shouldn't be backed. And they're the ones that ratified the decision to hire Hiraf and give him dual roles, which has turned out to be a massive problem. So,
and also against FIFA against mandates.
Yeah. Well, guidelines. They're not mandates, they're guidelines.
Yeah.
I just hope that everyone at New Zealand Football gives the investigation the information it needs and we get the right outcome at the end of it. New Zealand Football, fun times.
Yeah. Right outcome.
There's been a Chatham Cup draw, hasn't there?
Has he?
Oh, yeah,
I have not been paying any attention to local football at all. I've been in this World Cup bubble, I've lost track of everything that's been happening in local football.
I'll try and bring it up on my old phone here. But there's a quarterfinal draw for the Chatham Cup. Yeah.
You can edit out this gap, I'm guessing.
It's good content.
Can't start again. Rewind. Start again.
There's a quarterfinal draw for the Chatham Cup now as well, isn't there?
Is there?
Yeah.
I literally have no recollection of anything that's been happening in New Zealand football. Totally lost local football in this World Cup bubble I've been in.
Yeah, we do. I look it on the New Zealand Football website. I mean, I'm similar. I haven't really been following football at all, other than the World Cup. Nelson Suburbs versus East Coast Bays. Wairarapa versus Birkenhead.
Big.
Manukau United or Mount Albert Ponsonby versus Kashmir Tech. Obviously, that has a replay from rain delay.
Round. They've had some pretty horrendous.
And Onehunga Sports versus Western Suburbs, which is also
big game. Yeah, that's a big game.
Because Onehunga Sports lose their coach for this game as well, because he's just been appointed to the under-20s as a coach. Hiroshi Miyazawa. So, yeah,
great. I know nothing about the guy, but it's really cool to see another young coach from the regions getting an opportunity. It's really good. And I trust Dez's opinion about who he wants to work with. So if Dez is comfortable working with him, then it should be good.
Yeah, that means Wests lose a bunch of players in the under-20s and Onehunga lose their coach down to 20s. So
that's a real shame, actually, because I think those two teams at full strength would be
fun, right?
That'd be a great game.
Yeah.
It's in Auckland.
Mm.
That's a shame.
Yeah,
I'd love to have seen that.
Yeah, the only game in the Wellington region is the Wairarapa game, which could be good as well.
Yeah, it could be.
Birko's a good team to watch. So.
Yeah, or defending champ. No, 2 years ago, wasn't it? 2 years ago, I think they won.
Yeah. So the Football Foundation Kate Shepherd Cup semifinals. I shouldn't have read that whole thing out. The Kate Shepherd Cup semis have been announced as well. Wellington United hosting Dunedin Tech and Eastern Suburbs or Glenfield Rovers playing Hamilton Wanderers or Forest Hill Milford United. Which is a mouthful.
That's the weather again catching up with it.
Yes. Those games being played this weekend, by the looks of it. So we'll find out the rest of that semi-final as well. But, yeah.
It's the Auckland teams do always seem much, much stronger than the teams outside Auckland and the Women's League.
It's great to see Wellington United make the semis, though.
And they're playing Dunedin Technical, which means there's going to be a team from outside Auckland in the finals, which is fantastic.
Mm, you're absolutely right.
And on their day, Wellington United can beat anybody.
Yeah. They can.
They got players on that team that have played at W League level in Australia, so you know they've got some quality there.
Mm. At the same time, they can be swept aside as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if they're not on it, those Auckland teams could definitely do that.
So Rappin made it through with a 2-1 win over Stopout. Two Hamish Watson goals cancelling out Louis Corrales' penalty. And Western Suburbs made it through because of a 4-1 win over North Wellington. Eli just getting two, Noah Billingsley as well on the score sheet there for Western Suburbs.
Oh, Eli just is back.
Yeah, not on crutches.
He's been playing for quite a while.
Playing football and banging them in. Been a lot of rumours about him. I heard he was back. I heard he was over there. Heard he was had a broken leg. Heard he didn't have a broken leg, but he scored two goals. That's all we need to know, I think.
So if he scores two goals with a broken leg, I mean, wow.
Impressive.
We all agree. The kid is a real talent. He's not going to be here for much longer. There's, Olay does have connections over in Europe, and yeah. I don't think it's going to take long for him to get a contract somewhere over there.
Absolutely not. Anyway, that will do for New Zealand football, and let's move to the World Cup. It was a good World Cup. It's ended with France 4-2 victors over Croatia in the final. I picked France to win the whole thing at the start.
Yep, as did I.
Did not see them winning it in this fashion. Given everything else that happened during the World Cup, I did not think it would go this way.
Well, it's quite funny. Actually, since 1990, there's only been one World Cup with more than two goals, one World Cup final with more than two goals. And that was the last time France won it when they beat Brazil 3-0 in 1998.
This equaled the number of goals in the 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014 finals combined.
That's right.
Which is a ridiculous stat.
Yeah, which is brilliant. Yeah, so the 98 one was 3-0 to France over Brazil in the first time they won the Cup. So it's actually... And it's been said already, it's a great little microcosm of the entire tournament itself. You've got your VAR, you've got your own goal, because one of the most own goals in a history of the tournament. You had a couple of absolute screamer goals. Perisic and Mbappe's goals were, and Pogba's, to be fair, were absolutely beautiful goals.
Yeah.
It was a hell of a game. Like, as finals go, it would be the best most final unusual. I've watched. And prior to this was 86, which was Argentina 3, West Germany 2.
The first half in particular was an absolute battle. Yeah. Croatia on top for most of it.
Yeah.
France was getting the two goals, VAR assisted.
Yep.
Croatia fought their way back in. It was the two goals in, what, the 50th and 60th minutes, there or thereabouts.
Around then, yeah.
Yeah, for France, it really killed the game off, and then it kind of petered out across the last 30 minutes. Obviously, the Mandzukic goal was hilarious.
That was brilliant. I love that so much. I actually think that cost Lloris a golden glove.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think
I think he was odds on for it, and then they gave it to Thibaut. But when
there's no issue with Thibaut getting it.
No, absolutely
Thibaut was
not.
Brilliant as well.
But I think, yeah.
He's nutty as a fruitcake, though.
Yeah, probably.
He is just quite barking mad.
Do you know who else is? Hugo Lloris, trying that in a World Cup final.
Oh,
almost let Croatia back in the camp.
When you're up 4-1.
No. If Croatia had scored one more goal, that would have been the most amazing final and the most amazing finish to a final I think we would have seen in a long time.
I actually think it's the second best game of the tournament for me.
I reckon it's France's 4-3 over Argentina, and then followed by the 3-3
between Spain and Portugal.
That was my best game.
In a final, the context of the final helps.
Yeah, you never see a final that's open. It's always cagey. It's always defensive. You see people getting kicked in the chest before you
only
see something
recently
getting a goal.
Only recently. Prior to 1990, it was unusual to have less than 4 or 5 goals in a final.
Yeah, mainly because everyone's so fucking knackered.
Yeah, fair. But it's like prior to 1990, 3 goals was the least.
You realise that's still 30 years ago.
Yes, I do realise.
Football's changed a lot. Like the Premier League didn't exist in 1990.
Yeah. I'm just saying, it's not a trend. It's not unusual.
It's a trend recently.
Exactly. It's not over time. It's not given.
What killed me about that final was Griezmann breaking my heart by diving for that free kick right at the beginning. Because I really like Griezmann. But Jesus, it's like his ankles aren't attached to the ground.
He didn't need to do that.
No. What annoyed me was the ref fell for it.
For what it's worth, I think it's a foul. Because had he tried to stand on his feet, he would have still been taken down.
He would have, but...
It's the fact that he's thrown himself to the ground before the contact's even there that I don't like.
Yeah. Well, it's because he's effectively made the contact.
Yeah.
If he stayed on his feet.
If he stayed on his feet, he still would have been fouled and would have been fine. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. That killed me.
So two things?
Just found my list, and it was the third best game, in my opinion.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. The potential offside for the first goal, with Pogba running in on the back of the head...
Yep.
There's a camera angle that's come from the VAR that has lines in place and shows it wasn't offside. He wasn't in an offside position.
When the ball was played. He certainly looked like he was.
Yeah, but there was a leg sticking back from a Croatian player that meant that he wasn't actually offside.
And do you know what? I trust that the VAR's checked it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah. offside is one thing they get right. They
I
do tend to get that
I also think that as the laws state, even if he was in an offside position, this wasn't an offside offence.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
He did challenge for the ball.
Yeah, but if he was in front of Mandzukic, yes, but he was behind him. I don't think Mandzukic changes what he does because of Pogba being there.
Yeah, perhaps not.
Yeah, so I don't think it was there.
And he certainly didn't get in Subasic's way because Subasic didn't move.
Yeah. The VAR handball. Let's look at it from two angles. Handball or not handball?
I think it's a handball.
Given we've seen 63 games previously where that's a handball, I think it's handball.
I don't
like that it's a handball.
If you're setting the bar there as they had, then yes, that's consistent.
Yeah.
Should it be a handball? No.
It's much more of a penalty than the France one when the France one against Australia was.
That was Australia against France.
No.
That was a handball and TT stuck his hand straight.
That was absolutely a handball.
Yes, it was.
So there's the one against – who did Australia play second?
Denmark.
It's the one against Denmark.
He got it drilled.
He got it drilled into his arm.
Yes, that was never a handball.
Yeah. I think if we're giving that, we're absolutely giving this.
Yeah, basically we're saying that if it touches your hand, puff.
Exactly.
First I saw it, I didn't think it was. Like, I genuinely thought he's jumped up and he's pulling himself.
Yeah.
And that just happens to be what happens.
There's a lot of movement of arm towards ball.
Exactly. That's when I saw the more replays I'm saw. Like, it just genuinely looks like he's moved his hand just a bit faster down to get there.
No, for me, that was him. He's gone up. He's thinking, the French player in front of him is going to get the ball. And he's realised too late, oh, no, it's going over him. And he's thinking, get the hands down. Because if I have the hands out and it hits, I'm in trouble.
I think
so he's put the hands down. And
Pre-tournament, I would have said this is not a handball. But clearly on the interpretation of the rule across the tournament, I think
that set the precedent, so we know it was coming.
Thoughts on how the VAR handled it? Good,
too
bad?
Too long.
Way
too long.
I think the VAR has to basically say to the ref, look, it's a handball. With that one, it's kind of a little bit difficult because, you know, it is quite interpretive.
But again, we haven't seen – there were 14 VAR calls given in the tournament. Three of them were done without going to the screens because there were things like offside, onside, inside, outside the box, things like that, which are very objective. It's like, this is the case. It's black and white. Everything else we've seen, the referees have gone over, including all the handball penalties, and there's been a lot of them. So I don't mind that he went there. The fact he was there for almost 90 seconds was a bit long for me. But at the same time, it's a pivotal moment in the World Cup final. You want to get this right.
Yeah,
for me, the fact that I obviously have a bias that that shouldn't be a penalty, but the fact that he's had to stay there for 90 seconds reviewing it kind of starts getting to be the whole, you know, then maybe you shouldn't be calling it a penalty.
That's what we've always said about it, yeah. I quite like the way that VAR handled itself in this World Cup. Compared to the A-League, this VAR is actually something I am more okay with being in the game because generally it was really quick. It was finger to the air, we're going to go check it, watches two replays, comes back, gives a penalty. And it's for things that actually you're like, yeah, probably. That's a penalty. Not just Sean Evans coming in and completely fucking things up big time.
It was consistent at least. And I think that's all you can ask for any kind of competition is consistent ruling so at least the players know what to expect. They know that if it hits the hand, that's unfortunate, mate, but that's pen.
I think it made a big difference having four VAR officials
absolutely
in the booth.
Absolutely.
And having people actually controlling the screens, one doing offsides, one doing penalties, one doing all those different things.
You've got at least two sets of eyes on every single VAR request.
And the lead VAR, who's the only one communicating with the referee, is not touching any mouse, any wheel, anything. He's just watching constantly. I think that's a really good thing, the fact that he's not having to do the work, which is not the case in the A-League. We have maximum two people in that room.
This one of them usually being
Sean Evans, who's terrible at it.
This feels like it's been implemented the way you wanted it to be implemented. My biggest concern was the length of time it took for that decision in the final. I agree. We talked about this on the last pod, actually, or I said at the time that the stuff that had been referred back to the referee tended to be right.
Yep.
Then I saw, obviously, that Australia decision. God, that's horrendous. I can't believe they've given that as a handball.
Yeah.
But that is the outlier. All the other decisions that have gone back were clear and obvious and they should have been done.
Yeah.
So I don't think the one in the final was clear and obvious, but I can definitely think it was a handball and I do think he's delayed to get it right.
Yeah. And it's a weird one because it's the final, I want him to get it right. So I'm okay with him spending the time to do it. But also because it's the final, we should have kept play going on sooner. And so it's like, it's a double-edged sword.
I'm okay with that length of time as well if he adds it on, but he didn't.
He didn't. There was 3 minutes. It took 6 minutes for that penalty to be taken.
Four minutes. 4 minutes for that penalty to be taken.
But including the VAR stuff.
So the penalty was, I think it was like 33-36.
Yeah.
And the penalty was taken at 37-33. Right, or something like that.
But then there was an injury as well.
And, there should have been at least 6 minutes.
And
then we added
three. It's like, that, and that had been happening across the whole World Cup.
Yep. VAR, so comfortable to do it, just add the time on.
VAR incidents consistently not being added on to at a time, which is, it's easy. You know exactly how long it took you. Anyway. Yep.
Can we talk about the football?
Yeah. I think France would deserve winners.
Yeah.
They were certainly the most dangerous.
They grew into it. Their first game against Australia was poor, and they were lucky that they won that. It was literally millimetres in it.
Yeah. Denmark wasn't a great game.
No, but at that stage they knew they were through.
Yeah, that's. I'll be honest, that was the one game. I saw 53 games over the tournament in full, and I saw all the other ones, I saw the highlights or fast-forward goals or whatever, on fast-forward, except France-Denmark, where I heard all about it and decided not to watch.
But they also, like, both teams knew that a nil-all draw put themselves through.
and
the places they wanted to be. Yeah. France got first and Denmark got second, and they were both okay with it. And so sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
If a nil-all draw, a bore nil-all draw meant that the All-Whites went through the round of 16 in second place, I would be all over it. So I find it hard to criticise that one. But, yeah, every other game was excellent. So.
Yeah. There was some brilliant, brilliant football played. Okay, so best goal.
Either Pavard was good, but I think Messi's one for just sheer skill.
Oh, yeah, good call. What about you, Pat?
I can't remember who it was. It was the one. Was it a French player? I can't remember. It was the one that was hit on the half volley.
Pavard against Argentina. That was my pick as well.
Yeah.
And I also had the Messi one and then the Nacho against Portugal, which was also on the side volley.
Their third goal.
Pavard light.
Yeah, which was. Yeah, those three were absolutely
The Russian guy.
Cheryshev. The goal against Croatia. Curler.
Oh,
that was beautiful. But the second goal he scored against Saudi Arabia was a stunner as well.
I think that's the better goal.
And this is what's been great about that tournament. There's been no chat about the ball being, moving funnily or whatever. Everybody, it's worked like a ball should. There's been no crap shout like we usually have about the ball. It's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. What about your best player? In your opinion, doesn't have to be.
I thought it was going to be Luka Modric before he got awarded it.
Uh-huh.
I find it very interesting that again it's gone to a losing player on the final, which has happened relatively fairly often recently.
Yeah, it happened last time.
Messi got it the time before that happened as well.
Andreas Iniesta.
He won it, didn't he? That's his point.
I've got to say, I thought Modric. He controlled the game really well for Croatia.
He controlled games
and kept
for a team
possession.
That shouldn't have been doing as well as they were and helped his team pick up results.
Yeah,
so for that reason, I think Modric.
Just his way that he could just tick over the passes and get the ball kind of moving away from defenders and just he always seemed to have so much time. But for me, the guy that struck me the most as basically having an impact above what I would have thought was Vida,
that's
Croatian defender. Shittiest haircut ever.
Yeah, but he had a blinding tournament.
He was great. His covering, he made Lovren look like an absolute legend because he got caught out of position so many times.
Lovren played in the Champions League final and the World Cup final in
He's
the same year.
He's still loose as a goose. Him and David Luiz, for me, fantastic athletes, but shit defenders. They're just all over the place. Yeah. And Vida, mate, covered him so many times,
as well as having
Mbappe.
Yeah, I had him in the team of my tournament. Vida in the team of my tournament. I thought he was fantastic.
All day. I mean, you think about he basically had to deal with Mbappe up the right-hand side. Yeah. So while Veselko was up, he's having to basically man-mark Mbappe and cover Lovren, and Mbappe only got him past him once.
How good is Mbappe, though?
Oh, he's amazing.
He's got gas.
He is amazing.
And donated all his money from the tournament.
All of it. That's incredible.
At 19.
Every match fee and and his winner's check.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
That's cool. That's really cool.
He clearly doesn't need the money. And the gesture is worth more than whatever $500,000 is.
He gets like 300,000 euros a week. So, he's a rich, rich boy.
But still.
He's giving up half a million euros at least.
The only thing that put a damper on that was that we
dive. The time-wasting thing?
Yeah, there was a bit of a a bit of a fall over and a bit of a time waster. And just
there's been chat that he's starting to show a little arrogance as well.
Yeah, I can't speak to that, but certainly that's on the field is a bit disappointing. The story about Kante being not wanting to he wanted to pose with the, get one pose with the trophy and get his photo taken, but not wanting to actually say, "Excuse me, guys, can I have a turn?"
Yeah,
not till Nzonzo.
Nzonzo
actually said, "Hey guys, how about he has a go?" It's like the guys run a million kilometers for you. Let him have a turn.
How good is that photo of Macron in the chairman's booth?
Where he's standing on this, standing on the desk.
No, when he's doing the big fist pump after the first goal.
Yeah, he's literally standing on the desk in front of him.
Okay, yeah. And Putin's like 2 seats down, and Putin actively tried to get their election swung in the way of Marie Le Pen, and Macron won, like exposed it for what it was, unlike another election that we know about, managed to show in a way that didn't come across as just trying to win an election, win the election, and then turn up in front of Putin and do that. Is just that's amazing. We say that sports and politics should stay separate, but they don't, and we all know that. So I thought, yeah, that was a really cool moment for me.
The other thing was in that photo, the Croatian, she was the president.
She was weird, man.
She was awesome. She refused to take payment for the time that she was at the tournament.
Yeah,
and she travelled in
economy class
with all her fans all the way.
Yeah,
so you know what? That's awesome.
I don't like her. Because she kissed the World Cup trophy right before it was handed to the French. That should not be allowed.
No, so she's a head of state. She's allowed to handle it. That's the rule. The rule for FIFA is you either have to have won it or you have to be a head of state that trophy.
I don't think Jacinda Ardern should touch that trophy until
she's entitled to because she's a head of state.
No.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But the fact that she showed up to all the games and there's in that photo of Macron just pumping the fist, there's her with her head in her hand, just hands over her head, just kind of like, yeah, doing it tough.
Biggest flop.
Biggest flop?
Biggest flop.
Deutschland.
Yeah, Germany.
Neymar.
Oh, yeah, he flopped all day.
Yep. That's a trick question.
Yep.
You've tricked us, you've suckered us into saying Germany there.
Yeah.
And, the thing I like about it is that his reputation is shot because of it.
He's killed himself in this tournament.
Yeah.
There were so many people, and this is really embarrassing, so many people were so happy to see Brazil out of the tournament, and I was one of them, purely because of his antics.
Yeah.
Because Brazil are awesome.
Yeah.
Coutinho and Firmino are two of my favourite footballers. And
Coutinho was awesome too.
He was brilliant. And he was the only Brazilian I had near my my personal team of the tournament, and I didn't include him because of the taint of Neymar. I am so glad that everybody has seen what bollocks that is that he brings to the sport.
And the outcry about it and the jokes, and he's become an embarrassment to football, and everyone's seen it. And
well, the stupid thing is I think he's actually worse for their team. You look back to 4 years ago when he was out of that World Cup game against Germany. I honestly think that that's what killed them. They were so overwhelmed by, you know, the air gap between him and, you know, his personality being out of the team, that they didn't know how to do anything. He dominates the rest of the team so much that without I think that definitely he doesn't add. While he's an incredible footballer, he doesn't add to the team environment.
Rolls Royce of a footballer. The skills and abilities he has are phenomenal.
But he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And he detracts from the collective.
If you took him out and put Firmino in as a starter, that team itself would be brilliant, and I think they probably would have won the tournament.
They would have gone a lot further than they did.
Certainly be more likable. That's for sure.
100%. And that's a shame because I love Brazil.
All the videos of the Neymar challenges, like coaches blowing their whistle and everyone dropping to the ground, is just like
the KFC one.
Yeah,
rolling KFC. And there was something happened in the tennis match at Wimbledon.
Oh,
one
yeah.
of the exhibition matches.
And
yeah,
he starts rolling. It's brilliant. I love it.
But Neymar's just ruined his reputation in this tournament.
What was your best stat?
Best stat is that France are going out in the group stage in the 2020 World Cup at Qatar. That is my favourite stat so far.
It's almost nailed on.
We've locked that in.
Probably for me would be that Croatia's the smallest population country to ever make the World Cup final.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, what are they, 4.1 or something?
Same size as us, 4.2.
We're like 4.7 now, aren't we?
Maybe. Last time I heard it was around 4. It was just over 4. So.
For me, it was that Ronaldo and neither Ronaldo nor Messi has scored in a knockout game.
Interesting.
Just goes to show that, you know, while you can flat trick, you know, a good player in any team can flat trick bully a, you know, a rubbish team around the field, as soon as you get reasonable collective unit, having the best player in the world doesn't matter.
Well, you look at Ronaldo against Uruguay when he's come up against Godin Caceres. So Godin plays for Atleti. He's used to playing against Ronaldo, and the pairing at the back for Uruguay were
brutal.
They were brilliant. Again, near team of the tournament, brilliant. They were that good. So I can understand why he's had trouble there. You know, with the pod prior to the tournament, we talked about Golden Boot and how it can be done in the groups, because we've talked about it previously, and it happened with Oleg Salenko.
It definitely happened.
It did. And all those goals that he scored, he scored one goal was against Colombia, I think he got the penalty, but five of those came in the groups, and those five got him the Golden Boot, because the next was four.
Three of them came in the game against
Panama,
yeah.
Two pens, and the worst goal in history.
I think if this wasn't his hat-trick goal, I don't think he would have claimed it.
Yeah, fair. He scored four pens, didn't he? So he got against Tunisia. Was it a pen? I know he scored both the goals. One of them was the header at the back post. I think the first one might have been a pen. Yeah. And then against Panama, two pens and that deflection. And then Colombia, another pen. So basically, he's got six goals.
England were winning themselves penalties. They weren't having shots on target from anywhere else. They had the second lowest number of shots on target per game
horrendous.
In the entire tournament, ahead of only Panama.
Yeah.
They had 0.9 shots on target.
Yeah, I saw that. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Given they played Panama and scored five goals, that is a massive stat. That means that in other games, they just weren't hitting the target.
At all.
England are a strange one for me because they only made the semifinals because that's how the draw opened up for them big time.
They made the semifinals because Germany was shit.
Yep.
Basically, that's why they made the semifinals.
But also, as soon as they faced a good team in Croatia, they faltered.
I wouldn't even say that, to be honest.
I think that people mainly... Colombia played really badly. They came out with defensive tactics that didn't suit anything at all.
If they'd had James Rodriguez playing for them that game,
I
genuinely believe Colombia would have won that.
You're not going to get any argument from me.
And England... I think the reason why England think that England did really well is because they didn't completely collapse like every England team has done before them.
Mm-hmm. I actually think Gareth Southgate deserves a bit of credit here because
a lot of credit.
Me too, because he did what needed to be done.
So he's England were very heavily reliant on their set piece plays. You get, as an international manager, you get your players very short periods of time throughout the year. If you base them around making. You can't impart a style, right? If you're Spanish and they play tiki-taka at all the clubs and you put that into the main team, fantastic. But you can't, as Gareth Southgate, get all these guys from these different clubs who play different styles all the time and try and impart a style in a short period of time for them to put out on the pitch. It's just not going to happen as a cohesive unit. But if you can do some really clever set play moves, which are going to pay off and score you goals, and they did, and they got penalties out of them, and they got plenty of goals out of them as well, then that actually, it's quite a feasibly a good way to play football.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. First, Southgate gets an immense amount of credit for me because, first of all, he is playing with a very limited, very inexperienced team. And let's face it, this is the reason why England was so overwhelmed by how well they did, because they were expecting nothing from them. So he's recognised that he's not going to have that experience. He's not going to have that ability. You know, he doesn't have the 1990 team. He doesn't have guys that have played for years like Beckham to rely on. So, and he's realised that, you know, they're probably not going to dominate games. So how do we get our goals? We're not going to be able to just work possession. We've got to take the opportunities we have. We know that we're going to get set piece chances because everyone gets the odd one thrown in. So he's like, okay, we need to maximise that. And he studied NBA and a couple of other sports as well.
NFL.
And basically how to get space and time for players. And that's some amazing thought. And normally most coaches get panned for this sort of thing because you never can quantify it. But with this, you can look at that and go, actually, the number of times that they were able to get, say, Maguire's big fat melon on the ball from a corner, it's not luck.
It's all because he's learned how to create space for those players. It's really well done. The other thing that you look at with him is that he's a likable guy.
Absolutely. Humble. And he's brought that humility to the whole squad, which is so unlike an England squad. I want to hate England. I wanted to hate this one, but I couldn't.
I don't like watching them play. They're horrendous to watch, but I liked him and I liked the fact that he was humble. And the fact that Primark's sales of waistcoats skyrocketed whilst he was in the tournament.
Primark.
And they put a waistcoat on that.
Yes, they did. Angel of the North,
yeah. Yep. Which is cool. I like that. Yeah. Anyway, that was the World Cup. Done and dusted.
That was brilliant, eh?
No more football for a little while.
Yeah, so Premier League starts soon. August 11th.
It's a month away.
Four weeks away.
There's still like 3 and a bit months to the A-League.
Yeah. It's a long, long time.
It's 90 days away.
Yeah. I mean, the second season, the first season I was back in the country for, started in August. It also finished in March, but it started in August. I'll take that right now. I think it actually might have finished in February, to be honest. It finished really, really early on.
Yeah.
But
now where it is now is good.
Once they expand the league by the two teams, which we won't cover this week, we'll cover next time because it's October, I think they're looking at announcing those all November. Then rather than tacking on the end, they need to start it earlier. They need to start it because you'll be that
can
many
extra
games.
Can we talk about that expansion for a sec? Because that's just, to me, it's just so laughable.
Yeah, there's no team in that 10 that says, we deserve an A-League license.
Well, ignoring that, like I don't want to talk about whether a club deserves it or not.
Well, no, sorry, like not deserve, but like has...
The capacity has
the financial backing, has the crowd catchment, has all of the things that you should be looking at. Nobody has more than one of them. Some of them have money, some of them have a stadium,
but
some of them have a supporter base, but nobody has a bid that should be allowed into the A-League.
See, for me, it's like I don't want to say, you know, they don't have a catchment, or they don't have this, they don't have that. I mean, the one I want to look at quantifiables and say, okay, well, what's going on? And the fact that as an expansion team, they don't get FFA handouts, which roughly equate to, was it 3 and a bit million?
Yeah.
Now, when your overall budget is in the single digits millions of dollars per year, to not get $3 million. So that's a minimum of 30% of the active budget of the rest of the clubs you won't be getting. That's what, you know, 30% is a massive amount. But when you look at it, and take out, say, your overheads, like overheads for running a club, say being $3 to $4 million, it means that, you know, your player budget is probably only $3 million plus the extra $3 million that you get from the FFA. So these clubs, you know, have the potential to spend $6 million without going over their budget. The club, this expansion club, will be coming in with half that budget on their players.
You know why that is?
Is it because there isn't enough to go around?
No. The other 10 clubs have built that TV license up to be what it is now. Mm. The other 10 clubs are, first of all, unhappy that expansion is happening at all, but refuse to give away stuff that they feel they have earned to give them to new teams that have just come in for the first place. I don't think it's as laughable as you do. I think it makes it very hard to enter the A-League, but potentially that's a good thing because...
Well, no, I think it's basically there's no chance to compete, in which case their crowds are just going to die off and the club is going to... basically atrophy and die off. So I think
basically
it's just,
need
you might as well
don't
do it.
Yeah. The person that comes in needs $20 million or at least be able to find that in sponsorship for the first 3 years alone.
But
and
if,
that's going to be hard.
But if existing A-League clubs can't generate that kind of money, how does an expansion with no history and everyone knows they're already behind the eight ball because they're having to set up this club, they're having to operate with basically half their playing budget, they've got
unless
no
they
hope.
Have some fantastic sponsorship deals.
But again, why would the sponsors not go to Melbourne Victory or Sydney?
Yeah. Anyway, that'll do for this week. Let's wrap up there.
That's a good idea.
Because it's getting late.
Yeah.
And we have to drive back from Eastbourne. Yeah. So, good times.
It's a great drive back.
Yeah.
Yeah, being in the car with me and that's just scary.
No, it's fun, mate.
I caught the bus out here and...
You didn't take the ferry?
No, I couldn't. I didn't take the ferry.
You should have taken the ferry. The whale's back, mate. You might have seen the whale.
Maybe the ferry was cancelled because of the whale.
No, the ferry's still running today. Okay. I saw it.
No, it always runs.
The whale's not actually back, though. Just putting that out there.
It is back.
The whale's not back.
It's spot on the harbour today.
No,
yep.
It wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Good audio.
It was a hoax. We'll leave you there. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And we'll be back maybe next week. No, probably 2 weeks.
Yeah.
There's not enough happening every week.
No.
2 weeks' time, we'll be back for another episode. And Dave will be hopefully be back. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Whale Watch brings you.
Frosty's dog stealing Cameron's food brings you.
Cameron failing to eat like an adult brings you.